Greetings, welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, soa di karup, guten tak, jiao wi viva kat bang, half a day, jai janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace how, go vegan, from the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated, McNugget pharmaceutical kill, vivisection, prison, killitary, industrial, core, poor nation. In the cheese-covered, post-constitutional, bankster, bankrupt, corruptocracy, mocracy, criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, foodborne in the NRA, USA. Home of Uncle Sam. Manila, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Happy Labor Day weekend. And what makes it happy is we take a day off from our labor. Labor Day is that national celebration where we all collectively say, we hate our jobs. We're not going into work today. Of course, unless we don't have a job, in which case, then we want one that we can hate, so that we can take a day off from it, you know, tomorrow. So that's what's happening. And why wouldn't we hate our jobs anyway? We're doing something so miserable that somebody is actually willing to give us money to do it. Of course, that's going to be horrible. And there are some jobs worse than others. You know, what are some of the worst jobs, really? I mean, I would find it very difficult, for example, to be employed as the reputation manager for the Humane Society of the United States. Yes, that position actually exists. Sarah Barnett has it. I hope she's on call, because she'll be needed after animal rights commentary with Professor Gary Francione next hour. This hour, someone who actually worked at really the worst job in America, let's face it. He did it undercover at slaughterhouses and various animal processing facilities. Mr. X will join us today. Last week, I presented part one of debunking Alan Savory, whose TED Talk went viral, not because of science, but because he told people what they wanted to hear. Eat more meat. That's what everybody wants to hear, right? That's the solution. That's his solution for climate change. More so-called livestock on planet Earth, the exact opposite of what real climate experts say. Well, just as with the Fatkins diet, saying, you know, the opposite of what real health professionals say, you know, like Dr. Fatkins said, eat more meat. Well, where is Dr. Fatkins today? And now this unsavory Mr. Savory with his Savory Institute, whose past admitted environmental mistakes include killing 40,000 elephants, now tells us the solution to climate change is more so-called livestock production. He's leading planet Earth down the Dr. Fatkins path. You know, so many of these self-appointed environmental leaders, so many of these environmental groups are seriously environmentally ill. Nero fiddles while Rome burns. Bill McKibben eats grass-fed beef while planet Earth burns. Nobody seems to be informing the public that the only solution to climate change is a mass global vegan movement. Since all these meat-eating environmentalists aren't interested in saving the world, they're just interested in saving their repulsive habit. So I feel that I really feel like I have to pack my trusty megaphone and head from Northern California to my little hometown, or as I like to call it, the homeland, New York City. I always called it the homeland growing up there. I haven't been to the homeland since 1990 when I took a job with Tribune Broadcasting to switch WPIX-FM to CD101, WQCD, which was fun for a short time. But attempting creativity in a corporate environment, that's another story. If you'd like to chip in, though, and, you know, make a tax-deductible donation to help with transportation for my environmental excursion to the homeland for the People's Climate March on September 21st, please click donate at goveganradio.com. That would also make it possible for me to participate in the demonstration at City Hall on September 20th, that's Saturday, to stop the killing at New York City shelters. But I feel that the vegan climate change solution has been ignored for too long. We're told we only have 5 years to get it together and a shift to alternative energy and alternative energy infrastructure. We'll take about 20 years, about $20 trillion, and what the real climate experts are saying, that we need an immediate 25% shift away from so-called animal products to vegan products, and the concurrent freeing of land for reforestation saves the world within the timeline parameters allotted for us to save the world. So say Robert Goodland and Jeff Anhang. And I definitely recommend that you Google livestock and climate change. And also, and Robert Goodland was recognized, he's now deceased, was recognized as one of the top climate specialists in the world, basically working for the World Bank. That was his specialty. And so he was refuting this TED Talk by Savory, you know, the one everybody wants to hear, Eat More Meat. Where was I when I was talking about that last week? I have this here in front of me. All right, we talked about, Dr. Goodland says, the key alternatives to Mr. Savory's approach involve regenerating vegetation while reducing livestock, as described in one place after another, as I just mentioned. A widely cited assessment by Jeff Anhang and me explains how replacing at least 25% of today's livestock products with better alternatives, that means vegan, could both eliminate vast quantities of agricultural emissions and free up enough land for reforestation and forest regeneration to reduce atmospheric carbon to a safe level. Continuing with what Dr. Goodland said. Yet Mr. Savory has been videotaped at another recent talk claiming that his approach has been never refuted. That's a terminological inexactitude, as every part of his approach has been refuted. Notably, one analyst says Mr. Savory's claim that arid lands need more grazing is untrue. His claim that grazing promotes plant growth is false. And his claim that hoof action is needed to incorporate organic matter into the soil, germinate seeds, and filter water is unproven. Another analyst says Mr. Savory conflates how small wild grazers, such as rabbits, mice, reptiles, and insects, benefit land with what livestock do, and fails to distinguish between different types of desert. Yet another analyst says Mr. Savory's claims are based on one small study that nobody's been able to replicate, and there's evidence in satellite images that the more intensive the cattle grazing, the more catastrophic the results may be. Dr. Goodland says, in my own assessment, I'd point to videotape where Mr. Savory mocks requests for him to quantify his claims. Elsewhere, he's conceded that his claims must be reconciled with the fact that grazed cattle emit much more methane than their factory-farmed cousins. Relatively few cattle are grazed today on grasslands in the western U.S., yet degradation of those lands has inspired scientists to prescribe less grazing, the opposite of what Mr. Savory prescribes. In the World Bank Group, my longtime workplace, a project to expand and intensify livestock raising was described in The Economist in 2009 as an example of where the learning curve is long. This failed effort began in 2004 when some colleagues considered it prudent to work on a five-year experiment to test whether expanding and intensifying livestock raising in the Amazon forest region could become sustainable. It almost sounds like a joke, right? Like the Onion, what these people think who are in important environmental positions. It's beyond belief, right? And we trust the planet to them. Oh, those were my parenthetical remarks. I'm just back to Dr. Goodland here. Today's accelerated rate of climate change suggests that if experimenting with intensifying livestock ever were prudent, it no longer is. Mr. Savory's 50-plus year record of promoting rotational grazing can itself be seen as evidence that further experimentation is unacceptable. In the 50-plus years, few farmers have chosen to follow his approach. The popular food writer Michael Pollan has assessed the chances for farmers to change their ways this way. Quote, "The average American farmer today is 55 years old. We shouldn't expect these farmers to embrace the sort of complex ecological approach to agriculture that is called for." End quote. Mr. Savory has conceded that ranching organizations are not working with us and that public opinion must change. So he appears to be promoting culture change, which is normally generational at best and for which we scarcely have time in this age of climate change. Let me see if I can continue with Dr. Goodland's assessment of the unsavory Alan Savory. Mr. X coming up, former slaughterhouse worker, Professor Gary Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio. There's a Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden Facebook page and a couple of Bob Linden pages which you can follow. Happy Labor Day weekend. One last official grilling, right, for the summer season. One last chance to grill that flesh and give those kids another dose of those carcinogenic HCAs, those heterocyclic amines. But if you grill up vegan burgers or, you know, vegan alternatives, the only thing that happens is, it gets hot. Things are really getting hot on planet Earth with climate change. And the big People's March coming up in New York City on September 21st. That is my original homeland. I'm really making every effort to get there because we don't hear about the vegan solution to climate change. The only solution is a mass movement to go vegan. Alternative energy would take too long and is too expensive. We've been examining the suggestions from this environmental clown, Alan Savory, who says, eat more meat. We should have more so-called livestock. I've been looking at The Assessment of Savory's Work by Dr. Robert Goodland. And if you really want to know about animal agriculture and the environment and how it is responsible for at least 51% of all human-caused greenhouse gas emissions, Google livestock and climate change, and then maybe you'll join me in New York in trying to influence the environmental movement to, you know, actually do something instead of, you know, Bill McKibben leading songs, you know, that, you know, we have to do something, you know, what is it, you know, tell the government to have carbon trading hedge funds. I don't know. It's really crazy when all it takes is for us to all go vegan. And also you can look at chompingclimatechange.org, chompingclimatechange.org. So before the break, we were discussing, Dr. Goodland discussing Alan Savory, and it has been said that, well, Savory's methods of more livestock really require a culture change. The farmers are in their mid-50s. Nobody's going to take on his plan. And then Goodland says, okay, well, check that one off. That doesn't work. There are other ones suggested, too. You know, the demands of... and now Dr. Goodland speaking, the late Dr. Goodland. The demands of climate change should also be applied to trendy proposals to expand insect eating, which would surely take longer to become culturally acceptable than the five-year time frame in which experts say we must reverse climate change. The real experts say we have 5 years, okay? This is what I'm saying. The experts say we have 5 years. We can't, you know, change culture over to want to eat insects within 5 years, okay? It's not going to happen. I'm surprised anybody eats any animal flesh at all, but okay, can we change the culture over to eat real food? At least 25% of that culture immediately on the way to 100%, like if we really want to save the planet. Goodland says another trendy proposition involves in vitro or lab meat, yet one assessment after another says it doesn't yet exist, and even one of its most ardent promoters says it will take forever at the current rate of progress. So, you know, we're eliminating all the alternatives to us going vegan here. Dr. Goodland says, moreover, Mr. Savory hasn't explained how land could be accumulated on the scale at which he says it's needed. In fact, land acquisition is normally subject to the keen interest of government agencies and local communities, and land grabs have become highly controversial worldwide. Mr. Savory says that his approach centers on a decision process and a planning process, which he calls immutable, but he fails to account for how projected increases in climate volatility may force changes on all kinds of decisions and planning processes. Such volatility would likely accelerate mass die-offs not only of livestock, but also grasses and feed crops, which have been bred for thousands of years to maximize growth under non-volatile climate conditions. To adapt livestock and their feed to a volatile climate... Tell you what, we'll see if we can finish up on this after the break and then be talking to Mr. X, a former undercover worker at slaughterhouses and animal processing plants. The worst job in America. You make him do it. Your demand for meat, dairy, fish, and eggs. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. On Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden on Facebook. A couple of Bob Linden pages also on Facebook if you want to follow them and see me do everything in triplicate, quadruplicate, quintuplicate. So we have the World Vegan Summit and Expo coming up March 20, 21, and 22 at the Marina Del Rey Marriott. It's going to be a spectacular event, and you can see the importance of all gathering together and helping everyone to go vegan. The world depends on us, okay? This is the only way to save the world. I suggest you register and attend. Go to the website worldvegansummit.com, worldvegansummit.com. And our thanks to Vegetarian House for getting things rolling so we could secure the wonderful venue that we have. And Vegetarian House, 100% vegan restaurant in San Jose, 520 East Santa Clara Street. One of the best vegan restaurants you will ever visit. Visit vegetarianhouse.us, check out the menu. And also, if you have an event coming up, a business event, a social event, you're getting married, have Vegetarian House cater the event to make it that much more special. So thanks to Vegetarian House for support with the World Vegan Summit and Expo. And also we thank Sentient Lifestyle for its support. Visit sentientlifestyle.com. And before we talk to Mr. X on Labor Day weekend, someone who experienced the worst job in America, that would be working in slaughterhouses and animal processing facilities. The environment now more and more is on everyone's mind as we build toward the People's March, the Climate Change March in New York City, my homeland, on September 21st. And just before the break, I was demonstrating from the words of the foremost climate expert, Robert Goodland, also Jeff Anhang, that the vegan solution is the only way to address climate change. We don't have time or money for alternative energy, for... I mean, we have this crazy plan from Alan Savory, the Savory Institute, which actually is part of a an alliance, a so-called livestock alliance, to meet the needs of increased demand for animal products by 70% by 2050. Also in that livestock alliance, the Humane Society of the United States. So Robert Goodland was refuting Alan Savory's plan, which is more livestock to address climate change, which is insane. So Dr. Goodland, just to complete his assessment, said, to adapt livestock and their feed to a volatile climate will take generations of new breeding beyond the period of the next 5 years, during which experts say climate change must be reversed. Climate change is transboundary, meaning it doesn't respect borders. So wherever livestock might be raised under Mr. Savory's approach, they would surely be vulnerable to disruptive climate events. Such events cause large-scale livestock die-offs in 2009 in every region of the world, including the Philippines, India, Argentina, Kenya, and the U.S. Since 2009, large-scale livestock die-offs and climate change have unfortunately expanded. Climate change has reportedly caused even some legendary Arkansas cattlemen to abandon their livelihoods. At least Mr. Savory promotes his approach to farmers, policymakers, and academics, and not to consumers who must choose from foods available in the marketplace today. Indeed, few, if any, consumers seeking meat from their local grocery that produced that's produced using Mr. Savory's approach will find any such product to be available today. Nobody's using his approach. This is insane, okay? And nobody will. But he says, eat more meat. We like that message. Continuing Dr. Goodland here. However, while Mr. Savory himself cautions that most livestock today are produced unsustainably, meat promoters can be seen spinning Mr. Savory's claims as if they apply equally to factory-farmed meat. Yet it's no new trick to promote factory-farmed meat as... yet it's no new trick to promote factory-farmed meat as grass-fed. Ah, I see. So, okay, factory-farmed meat is being promoted as grass-fed. Okay, I get that. A grassland producer has himself noted that most marketing of grass-fed beef is a hoax. Beef marketed this way commands a 200 to 300% price premium. So the incentive for producers to cheat is overwhelming, as evidenced on one videotape after another. Consumers commonly ignore cautionary analysis regarding unsustainable meat. If they keep on buying it, even when it's sold with no certification of sustainability, one might consider it a victimless crime, except everyone will pay the price of climate change if... in reality, it's not reversed. So I guess we'll just leave it at that. So you see the hoax also of grass-fed, and we're told that grass-fed animals produce up to 400% more methane than their intensively confined cousins. So there you have it. Alan Savory and his institute and his plan to end climate change with more meat, more livestock, debunked on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, where our next guest is Mr. X. It's Labor Day weekend, and Mr. X worked at the worst jobs in America. There's a 100% turnover rate in a year at slaughterhouses and animal processing facilities. And welcome back to the program, Mr. X. You've been on before discussing your undercover work. How are you doing today?
Thank you, Bob. It's always a pleasure. I hope you're doing well on this pre-Labor Day, I guess, Sunday.
Yep. Well, we're doing well. We're trying to get people to go vegan, so you can't do weller than that.
Indeed.
Yeah. So, you know, people don't realize the human toll. Well, they generally don't realize the toll on non-human animals, too, the suffering you know, that they experience, but they also don't realize the human toll of the slaughterhouse worker, the worker in the animal processing facility. Tell us about, your mission was to photograph what happens behind the scenes, so that's why you applied for these jobs. Tell us about what would your resume how would your resume read, and tell us a bit about your experiences and what you've seen.
Sure. Well, you know, I've worked at a variety of different slaughterhouses and production units. I worked as a hog farrowing technician at Iowa Select Farms in Iowa, which is one of the largest hog producers in the country. That's where we would castrate piglets, cut their teeth off, cut their needle teeth, cut their tails off, you know, that kind of thing. I worked as a live hanger, a couple different places.
A live hanger? What's live a live hanger?
That's, I'm sorry. That's for anybody in your audience that doesn't know. That's the job in the chicken slaughterhouse where the chickens are dumped on the conveyor belt, and you're in the room and you're putting live chickens up on the little hooks that are upside down, and then their next stop is stun bath, and then having their necks ripped open. So that's the job where you're in with the job I was in. There's about 10 others of us in there with this eerily lit up room. It was dark, but it had a little blue tint to it. And we would pick up a chicken every couple seconds. We did 50,000 chickens in an 8-hour shift. And you know, you think, there's truly one of the most horrific jobs I've ever experienced.
You or your crew would hang 50,000 chickens every 8 hours.
Yeah, there's about 10 of us, and we would hang 50,000 chickens in an 8-hour shift. Mm.
So let's remember that it's a mass murder one by one, right?
No doubt. I worked as a crab cooker in a seafood processing plant in Northern California, and that's basically where we boiled thousands and thousands of crabs alive. My coworkers next to me had another machine where they were pulling the crab legs, literally pulling the crabs apart alive. I've been on the kill floor of every single Tyson chicken slaughter plant in the United States, with the exception of one in Arkansas, and There's a lot of chicken plants. There's a lot. Tyson's got a pretty big operation there, Bob. It's pretty. So I've been on, literally on the kill floor of every single Tyson chicken slaughter plant in the country, with the exception of one.
About how many are there then? How many Tyson killing?
I asked that. I don't know if it's just I don't know if I'm just blanking out because it the numbers are too horrific. I was in Georgia, Mississippi, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Virginia, Iowa, all over the country. Mm. So
this mass murder, I mean, this mass murder goes on behind the scenes. You know, I mean, people pick up their little package at the grocery store. They should probably be wearing a hazmat suit when they do pick up that package. But
yeah, I mean, I don't say my very first orientation day at Tyson, in Virginia, one of the things I'll never forget is that the woman came out and she said, you know, we have a 90% turnover rate in the first 3 months, and that she's, every single person is in pain. You just need to learn to work through it. Said your wrist, they told me, your wrists and your arms are going to swell up, and there's nothing you can do about it. She said, she just recommends you invest in a lot of aspirin and Tylenol. Maybe look for a little wristband, like one of those lace wrist bandages or whatever. But the very first day, they're telling you, yeah, every single person here is in pain. Just get used to it and just work through it. And of course, what any human goes through is not even comparable to what the hell those chickens are going through. I'm not making any kind of comparison to what the
Mr. X, hang on. We need to take a break, but we will continue with your horrific work experience this Labor Day. Remember, if you eat meat, dairy, fish, or eggs, you are causing people to work under the most deplorable conditions. We'll continue our discussion on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. On Twitter at goveganradio, Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. A couple of Bob Linden pages on Facebook you can follow also. And I invite you to visit the website worldvegansummit.com. Coming up March 20, 21, and 22 in Southern California, let us gather together to focus on vegan advocacy and let us save the world, the animals, and human health in the process. Thanks for support from Nature's Flavors. You can visit naturesflavors.com. From Nature's Flavors, we get Select Brand, Select, S-E-E-L-E-C-T, as in Select Tea and Coffee. We'll be drinking organic Select Tea, organic coffee and tea from Select at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. Also from Nature's Flavors, Bill and Bertie's sodas and baking mixes, vegan, gluten-free, sugar-free, chocolate brownie mix, and thousands of products from this 100% vegan company. Products available at Viva La Vegan Grocery in Rancho Cucamonga and Santa Monica. You can visit VivaLaVeganGrocery.com. It's Labor Day weekend, and you think you have a terrible job. Well, our guest today is Mr. X, who went undercover at various slaughterhouses and animal facilities around the country, animal processing facilities. And so, Mr. X, how did you decide the first time that you could do this? Obviously, you do this out of concern for animals. You wanted to get video footage to show the world how awful conditions are and what happens in these places.
I think it's, in my case, I'm certainly different from your average worker that goes into work for a slaughterhouse. And I had a goal, a purpose in life. And so, when I go in there, I realize it's about the animals. And it's not about your own feelings. It's not about whatever pain you may be suffering or whatever. Emotional stress you may be going through. You're to go in there, document the conditions, and then hopefully expose it to the world, and hopefully somebody else will, people start making a difference, and they'll change their, we can go vegan. But I want to see, invariably, whether it was a slaughterhouse or a hog farrowing unit, what I've noticed is that, you really, and everybody in the faith, they need to shut, you need to shut down any sense of empathy or compassion to survive the job. There are a few sociopaths, and sociopaths certainly do very well in these jobs. But it, society in general, there's not that many sociopaths, and so the rest of the jobs have to go to what we call normal people. And in order for them to survive, they've got to shut down emotionally and to become callous. Notice that you look at the studies, and the studies show that these communities that have slaughterhouses have a much higher incidence of domestic violence and alcoholism. Some of these studies show up to four times as much domestic violence and alcoholism within communities where slaughterhouses are located. And the violence at the slaughterhouse, it simply does not stop at the slaughterhouse gate, but continues into the community. Workers take the violence home with them. They take it out on their families. I would say to people, even if you don't care about animals, but you care about people, you must be opposed to the slaughterhouse. You must be opposed to animal agriculture. You see, because these jobs are killing our families. These people are coming home. They become desensitized. The violence permeates their souls, permeates their bodies, and they come home and they take it out of their kids, their wives, or their husbands. It's a miserable, miserable existence. And like I say, when you see these cases of brutality against animals or whatever, I want to make the point that this is institutionalized brutality. It's a whole system that needs to be abolished. It's not a matter of a few bad employees hitting a pig or, choking a chicken sometime. The system itself is corrupt and abusive. And until the entire system is brought down, until we end, the slaughter of all animals, you're going to have abuse. It's inherently it's abusive. You're killing billions of animals. It doesn't get any more violent than that, and I don't see how anybody separates out the violence. You can't go to work for 8-10 hours a day.
Hang on, Mr. X. We'll continue our discussion on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Once again, welcome to the second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, nationally syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network, GCN, now broadcasting for 13 years, as heard on the Air America Radio Network and Clear Channel and CBS radio stations. And we are happy that you are with us today. It's Labor Day weekend. We're talking about really the worst jobs in America. And these are employees of everyone who eats meat, dairy, fish, and eggs. So if you're putting money into any animal, so-called animal products or secretions, you are the employer of slaughterhouse workers and workers at animal processing plants. And today we're talking to Mr. X, who has worked undercover in many of those. And, you mentioned, Mr. X, that really the people who work there aren't sociopaths. They're people who are really desperate for a job and need money. And, who is working at the slaughterhouse?
I think a lot of the perception is that it's a lot of undocumented workers. And, yeah, that certainly is the case in a lot of places that I worked at. But certainly there's in the seafood processing plant up in Northern California, just a bunch of, white guys and some Hispanics, poor people that needed a job making a few bucks an hour in Iowa. There was kind of a mixture of Hispanics and, some good old boys. In the Southeast, it was a lot of African Americans. It depends on where you go, but you're not going to find too many CEOs working on the kill floor. That's for sure. They're going to be the ones, exploiting the workers.
But you say that there's a 90% turnover rate within 3 months, and I've heard it's 100% over the course of a year. What's so terrible about it? What if we were looking in, with a bit of a bird's eye view of any of the places where you work, the kill floors or whatever? What would we see, and why is it so terrible that there's a 100% turnover rate?
Well, one of the jobs that my colleagues had, and imagine this: he's working at a chicken slaughter plant, and his job was to stand in this kind of this little hole, and they give him a shovel. And his job was to keep shoveling out all the chicken heads and the feathers and body parts that fell in to keep this hole open, so the blood would keep pouring out. So the entire time he's got full ring slicker on, and for 8 hours he's got blood, feathers, chicken heads, everything's like literally pouring down over his head, and he had to keep keep the hole open so this blood could keep pouring down it. So it
sounds like a horror movie.
As disgusting as that is, it's probably not the worst job in the place, because most of these places most of the workers suffer from repetitive injuries. You've got a lot of carpal tunnel syndrome there. You're using blades at a very high pace, or you're, in my case, working this live hanger. You're picking up a chicken, maybe a couple pound chicken, and you're putting them up every couple seconds. And I got to tell you, within a couple minutes, I was exhausted. At the time, I thought I was in pretty good shape. And you would think picking up 2 or 3 pounds, a couple pounds, isn't that much. But you try lifting that up above your head. And I shouldn't say it, because these are living, breathing beings. And to this day, I have nightmares about that experience, just looking in their eyes. And it's absolutely horrific. But the workers there, you can't think of these chickens as individuals. You can't imagine a living being, because you go insane. These are just pieces of, it's like hanging up some fabric or whatever. And the thing is, you've got to go in so quickly that you've got to pick them up. You're slamming them on the hooks so hard that sometimes a leg would literally rip out of the body. You slam them as quickly as possible. You can never, at least with us, it never seemed like we could get them all up on the hooks before the next load of chickens came down. So theoretically, you're supposed to have a minute or two between loads of chickens. Chicken trucks unload the chickens from the outside and they come down, you process all of them all, and then hopefully you got like a break or two to put the chickens, the next load down. And what happens is that you've got so many chickens that would fall off the conveyor belt that as soon as you're done with the one load, you're reaching down and picking up the chickens that have fallen, 3 feet to the floor or whatever, this concrete floor, and you're picking them back up, and you're just going non-stop. I dare any football player to, NFL player to kind of work in one of these places. It was insane. One of the hardest jobs I've ever had to do. Working at the bearing plant, you're bending over. This thing tore my back. You are bending over these pens, every minute, picking up the pigs, to either chop off their tails, to cut off their teeth, to kill them, whatever you got to do. We can talk about that later. But it is just brutal work. It's not nonstop. It's quick paced, and I often wonder
how people feel like they can get nutrition from a scene like this. From this you expect life and living well. A scene like this, you're just painting the most brutal picture of concentration camps and tortured, tormented workers psychologically and physically.
Well, it is me. I never saw this happen. I have no. But we're kind of strange. A lot of these undocumented workers come in. Of course, they're they're at the complete mercy of their employers. And so there's been countless documentaries and countless incidences that people have been prosecuted where these employers are sexually abusing and even raping the women, and nothing gets done. Because, you know, what are you going to do if you're a poor immigrant worker that's, you know, her job is dependent upon, you know, working at Tyson or wherever she's at, and, you know, you're pretty much at the mercy. So, I've had a lot of hard jobs, but this is by far and away the worst. I think the thing about this job is it never leaves you. Even, you know, I've been years since I've worked as a live hanger or as a dog farrowing deck, and that to this day I have nightmares about that job. Those jobs still stay with me. Sometimes I'll wake up in the middle of the night with a cold sweat just remembering, you know, certain things that I was, you know, saw or participated in.
As you say, it seems like many of the workers deal with it by domestic violence, alcoholism, and all. And I want to say that
I think it's a job. It's a lot of these people. These are not sadistic people. They're going in to, you know, the slaughterhouses and production units. There are some, but I tell you, every single place I've ever worked at, I could probably prosecute. I could find something that every single individual did, and, you know, get them on camera and, you know, prosecute them. I had one guy I worked at the Iowa Select Farms. The guy's name was Bill. Truly one of the nicest guys I've ever met in my life. He would never curse. I never saw him intentionally, you know, with malice at a pig or even for fun. He claimed to be a nice Christian. Just one of the nicest souls I've ever met. I mean, there's some other complete a-holes and brutal guys at that point too, but I guarantee you, I could, during the course of the day, I could videotape this guy, and he would be cutting off the tails of a pig, or cutting off their teeth, or castrating the male pigs without anesthesia, as were I, and anybody that saw that would think, how the hell could you do this? This guy's got to be some kind of sociopath, you know, but he wasn't. I mean, this is what the job forced him to do. He was forced to kind of, you know, shut down his emotions. At the same time, I could go to the next room, and I could videotape some other guy punching a pig or kicking a pig. And usually this is in the course of trying to get him to move from one gestation crate or gestation call to another, or, you know, to another room. And I got to tell you, the one thing that's always kind of got to me is that, yeah, we'll videotape the people punching that pig in the face or kicking him. And that, believe me, that is appalling. There's no excuse for that. That person should be arrested. But that same person goes to the room over, is chopping off that pig, chopping off the pig's tail, is cutting off their evil teeth, and that those little pigs, trust me, are suffering every bit as much. That pain is excruciating, if not more, than when that pig was potentially, you know, punched in the face or kicked. And yet, you cannot in a million years could you prosecute that person for, you know, putting pain on the pig. That's industry standard. That's acceptable. They would laugh you out of court if you try to prosecute them for mutilating that pig. And yet, if you or I were to come across a video or videotape somebody taking a little, you know, or a little golden retriever puppy and cutting off his canine teeth and then chopping off his tail and castrating him alive, there would be a million people on the streets. That thing would be on YouTube. There'd be 100,000 hits within a day. There'd be cries for the guy's head. People will be, and I guarantee you, the guy would be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law for animal cruelty. And yet, every single day, hundreds of thousands of baby pigs are going through that. And no, you will know, we'll never touch them. Every once in a while, we'll catch somebody on film punching a pig or, you know, kicking a cow or whatever. And yeah, they'll be prosecuted as well as they should. And yeah, I want to say that I have no sympathy for anybody that hurts an animal. If they get arrested, and that makes other people think that maybe I shouldn't work as a slaughterhouse worker because I might get prosecuted. Hey, I'm all for that, but let's bear in mind, it's the CEOs, it's the people that own these companies, it's the people that are eating the meat, they're responsible for the system. If you were consuming any animal product that comes out of one of these factories, you are as equally responsible for the conditions and the brutality that goes on to those animals. You're complicit in their pain, you're complicit in their murder. I mean, these animals are being moved around because you want them to be moved to the next place so they can be you know, killed for your, you know, for your palate. So, and I guess I kind of rambled there, but I just
it wasn't rambling. It was like that's what we need to hear. You know, I mean, the thing is, you know, they don't want to move to the next place. They don't want to get slaughtered. They don't, you know, so you always have to prod them or slap them or punch them or do something to make them move, which if videotaped, you know, would cause outrage.
You know, it's a good job, but why aren't we prosecuting people for chopping off the tail, which rarely...
Right, because it's business as usual. We'll have one more segment together. We'll have one more segment together with Mr. X on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com on Twitter at GoVeganRadio.
I'm Jan Smitovich, and I'd love for you to check out my debut novel, Orange Rain, a darkly humorous revenge on Monsanto story. Former animal liberation prisoner Peter Young writes, "The eco-warriors next door embark on a lightning round of vigilante justice, literature that incites. And Camille Marino, founder of Negotiation is Over and 11th Hour for Animals, calls it a compelling, fast-paced adventure through some of society's most intriguing subcultures, filled with incisive political commentary. Orange Rain is printed on recycled paper and available now from vegan-owned Treball Press. That's TREBOL Press.com. Or find it on Amazon. Orange Rain by Jan Smitovich. Smitowicz. Please support your vegan social justice authors.
On Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. In just a few minutes, commentary from Professor Gary Francione. And what can I say? Hands up, don't shoot. Hooves up, don't stab. Today we're talking to Mr. X, who has worked undercover at various slaughterhouses and animal processing facilities around the country. And you made an interesting point in that you are so experienced at obtaining undercover video, and it sounded before the break that you were presenting the message that these videos should actually be saying to people, go vegan. And I object to many of these undercover videos being released by some major groups. I won't name, you know, like Mercy for Animals or Humane Society of the United States, who release them. But there's not really the vegan message. What happens is they wind up prosecuting these desperate low-level employees who were punching or kicking an animal, like, which, you know, any video you get is going to show somebody abusing an animal. Of course, we don't see the videos of the institutionalized violence, cutting the teeth, tails, castration, you know, which there won't be any improvements to that. So this serves, to me, it seems, as a means of raising donations, because the worker is prosecuted. The big company says, oh, well, we fired the worker, and now we have great training programs. Nobody will ever do this again, and suddenly all the pig meat is humane, you know, or something like that. Am I reading my mind wrong there, Mr. X?
No, I see where you're going with that, and I would say that, you know, my position is that I have zero problem prosecuting anybody that punches a pig or chokes a chicken or does whatever. I don't care. I think it'd be classist or racist if you didn't prosecute somebody just because they were of a lower economic stature, because they abused an animal. I don't care whatever your status in life. You have no right to put your hands on a woman, on anybody. I would prosecute anybody, and I would think that, and I would say that if I prosecute that individual, it makes other individuals scared to go into taking that job. then go for it. But you can't stop there. Yeah, that can be a part of it, but you've got to point out that the only way you're going to end the violence is and the abuse is to shut these industries down. You've got to go vegan. They're getting rid of a worker or another worker. You can go into any slaughterhouse, anywhere in America, any production unit, any day of the year, and find somebody and prosecute them. I almost guarantee you that it wouldn't take more than 2 days at the most to catch somebody doing something that on tape. But that's not the issue, because there's violence all around you, and why is some violence okay and other violence is not okay? We've legalized some violence, chopping off tails, and criminalized other violence, you know, moving a pig too hard by punching it, which is wrong. But I think, you know, we've got to. When those videos
and we're never upset with the killing. You know, we're concerned. Oh, look, this guy punched well, the pig. But what about the killing, the beheading, the slashing?
Well, yeah, and you've got it. If I would show the abuse, prosecute the jerk, did that, but invariably have the majority of that video, or have the video also show the entire process killing that animal, whether it be a goat or whatever, show what's actually going on to the rest of those animals, and you keep just saying, you got to go vegan. And we got to go after the people that are running these institutions. You never see the managers getting caught on film doing this. They don't need to. Everybody knows what's going on. It's never one or two bad guys. I'll tell you what, you know, which part of the job as a hog farming tech, one of the things you have to do is they come up to you and they say, that pig is ADR, which means ain't doing right. And they're not going to spend 2 cents on any drug to, you know, fix a pig. So you pick the pig up by its little piglet up by its rear feet, and you smash its head on the concrete to kill it right in front of its mother and other sows. This goes on every day. Believe me, it's one of the sickest things I've ever seen. Now, here to you, if you had done this to a dog, or if I showed you videotape of some guy doing that, you think, holy, you know, this guy's got to be prosecuted in a heartbeat. We got to prosecute everybody that's doing it. That, my friend, is completely legal. That's one of the sickest things I've ever had to go through.
It's all part of the recipe. It's the recipe for, you know, bacon, ham, pork, right?
I say prosecute everybody that works in the slaughterhouse. I feel bad for the people that, you know, have to do those jobs. But, you know, but there are other jobs out there.
Go vegan, put them out of work, make them organic and veganic farmers. Mr. X, we're out of time. Thanks for a great discussion today. We appreciate it. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. We start Groovin' Live every Sunday at 5 in the afternoon Pacific Time. You can always click Listen Live at GoVeganRadio.com. The show is archived there also. And every week you hear animal rights commentary from Professor Gary Francione, distinguished professor of law and philosophy at Rutgers University, the first academic to teach animal rights theory in an American law school. And his latest book with Anna Charlton is Eat Like You Care. It's in many languages, probably one that you speak, including English. And the website is abolitionistapproach.com. So how are you today, Professor Francione?
I am very well, Bob. And how are you?
Terrific. I'm sitting here with Daisy, just, you know, grooving to the 30 seconds of music that takes place between commercials here all the time. And are we still talking about what you mentioned you would like to discuss?
Well, yes, I did want to share with you, though, something that happened today that I really enjoyed, and that is I attended by Skype the final session of the reading group, the summer reading group that's been conducted by the International Vegan Association. and it was quite excellent. What they're doing is they're educating people by having them read pretty widely in animal ethics, not just my work, but the work of others, and to see where my work has come from and what it disagrees with and whatnot. So they're reading Singer and Reagan and other people, and as well as my work. And I spent two hours and a bit with these folks today, and I was really impressed by the quality of the questions that that I got, and I think reading groups are a terrific way of educating people and really getting, you know, if you want to be a serious animal advocate, this sort of thing is really an absolutely essential tool, and I would recommend it very highly. And the International Vegan Association is going to be putting on more of these in the fall and winter. And I would encourage anybody who really wants to undertake animal ethics in a serious way to join one of these reading groups. They're free of charge. You know, all you have to do is do the reading and participate. You know, it doesn't cost you anything except your time. And I can't imagine time that would be better spent. In any event, so I would.
Would you remember one of the top comments or questions that would be raised there? Is it appropriate to ask? Does that make any sense right now, or would it take too long?
I mean, I got a range of questions. I mean, people were asking me about the aspects of the environmental argument, how the environmental argument and the ethical argument related to each other, things about how you deal with people. How do you deal with relatives? You know, how do you deal with friends, close friends, and relatives who don't seem to get it or don't want to get it? I mean, I think it's a really terrific question, because it's something that comes up for a lot of us. Is how do you deal? You know, how do you deal with that when you confront the fact that a loved one or a really close friend or whatever, it simply doesn't care about, you know, acknowledges this is a moral issue and acknowledges that you're right and then says, I don't care. How do you deal with that? And that's a really very, very difficult thing to do. And we talked about how to approach people, and how it was very, very interesting. The questions were really excellent. And it was clear that these people had read, and you know, I was asked about, you know, the whole business about, you know, what do you do? How do you deal with arguments that eating locally produced animals actually results in less harm to animals than if you get vegetables imported from California or Florida and things like that. These are things which come up fairly often, and I was really impressed by the discussion, the questions I got, and the level of analysis that these folks were bringing to their work and their thinking. And I think it speaks very well about what the International Vegan Association is doing, and I commend them for it. I really support that sort of thing, and I'm very, very impressed by their work, and I'm more and more impressed the more exposure I have to them. But in any event, what I wanted to talk to you about tonight was that I sent you yesterday, Bob, a page from Animal Sheltering, a magazine called Animal Sheltering, July, August 2004, and it was, excuse me, it was the president's note from Wayne Pacell, who is the president and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States. And the essay is called Allies All Around Us. And basically, Wayne tells us...
Oh, Gary, I think it's 2014, actually. If I'm looking down at the bottom, Animal Sheltering, July, August 2014.
Oh, did I get the date wrong?
Yeah, well, you said 2004, so I wasn't sure.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just off by a decade, Bob. Don't start nitpicking with me.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Okay, yes, 2014. It was just last month, or this month, I guess. We're still in August. And Wayne talks about, you know, the various people who are allies with us, the shelter staffer bathing a homeless animal, an animal control officer investigating a hoarding case, a worker feeding a tiger at a big cat sanctuary, blah, blah, blah. And then he gets down to Whole Foods Market is a part of our movement, too. Having established a multi-layered humane rating system for the animal products it sells, giving consumers options other than pork or eggs from factory farm. Mm-hmm. As is Lush, which won't sell cosmetics or personal care products tested on animals. And what about companies like Burger King and Costco that have decided they want to clear their supply chain of pork from sows raised in crates or laying hens in battery cages? They are helping our cause as well. And then Wayne also mentions the farmers who decide that they won't confine sows or veal calves in crates. These are our allies. Now, the concept or the notion of an ally, I mean, what do you think about when you think about an ally? An ally is somebody who supports you and who you support. That's mm-hmm. what it means to have someone
probably
as an ally.
Share common values.
Well, it's a certain sense of camaraderie. Mm-hmm. It's a certain sense of, I mean, it's a sense of mutual loyalty, support. Loyalty and support.
Yeah, yeah.
And the
I must say I'm not feeling that for Burger King yet, but maybe you know, a little.
Or Whole Foods, actually. I must tell you, I find Whole Foods actually more objectionable than a conventional grocery store. You walk into a conventional grocery store, nobody pretends that they give a damn about animals. You walk into Whole Foods and, you know, you're just bombarded with that obscene propaganda that, you know, that our animals are happy, they volunteer to be slaughtered and killed, and, you know, they die for your table, and they've just won the lottery. They're in our system. And, you know, and I find that really, really repulsive, actually. And I find it more objectionable. I try to avoid Whole Foods all I can. I'll shop just about anywhere. I find it offensive to be in that store, to be in any of those stores. And but what concerns me about this is the idea that these are our allies, and the message that is sent out. And, you know, I was thinking, Bob, I've been doing this for 30 years now, and when I first got involved, I could see the Humane Society of the United States, which I think, if I remember correctly, I think John Hoyt was running it when I first got involved. He certainly was around when I was fairly new to the movement. And I could see John saying something like this, that, you know, we need to work with people like, there wasn't Whole Foods back then, but I could see John saying something like this. But that was the message that you always got from HSUS, because it's an animal welfare group. What's disturbing about this is Purcell and Shapiro and all the people at HSUS promote themselves as animal rights advocates. They promote themselves as basically, you know, Purcell talks about our movement as if there's this unified structure, which 30 years ago HSUS would have been the first to say, look, you know, we're not part of the animal rights movement, we don't want anything to do with animal rights. And now what's happened is this sort of obfuscation and fuzzy, you know, everything's a fuzzy edge. And what's happened now is, you know, it's not just HSUS that's saying this, but HSUS is supported by Farm Sanctuary and Mercy for Animals and Compassion Over Killing. And if you look at the 2005 letter that Peter Singer sent to Whole Foods expressing appreciation and support, and that's a direct quote, appreciation and support for the, quote, pioneering program of welfare that Whole Foods was promoting. You see, it's signed by not just HSUS, by PETA, by Farm Sanctuary, by Vegan Outreach, by Compassion Over Killing, by Mercy for Animals, by Viva USA. And so, you know, it's what's disturbing is that the movement, in a sense, has become more monolithic than it was 30 years ago. You know, 30 years ago, you know, HSUS, as I said, would be the first to say we're not the same as PETA, and we're not the same as these other organizations. We're not the same. You know, we're not interested in animal rights. Now you have all of these organizations saying we're basically doing the same sort of thing. There may be minor differences between us, but basically we're the same organization. We just have different names. That's all. And so, you know, and that's what's really disturbing about this, is this idea that there's this monolithic thing that has arisen called the movement. And the movement, you know, and what's disturbing is that not only are the other groups not objecting to this sort of rhetoric and this sort of propaganda, they mean, you know, they're not saying, I'm not seeing anybody say, look, Wayne, You know, you're not speaking for us. Look, Wayne, it ain't part of our, you know, Whole Foods isn't part of our movement. You're not hearing that because that's not the reality. The reality is they all agree with him. I mean, look, PETA gave an award to Whole Foods. They gave them an award for being the best animal-friendly retailer. You know, you have Veg News or whatever that ridiculous magazine is called, which had, you know, which gave awards to John Mackey and had him on the cover of the magazine. They had him on the cover standing, and you could see cheese in the background and things like that. You know, you have these organizations all support this stuff. And so this is, that's, in many ways, Bob, we're not moving forward. We're really taking massive steps backward.
You know, and I think Wayne sees the donation
30 years ago.
Yeah, we're taking a break. It's the music is on. We're taking a break, and I think Wayne sees a donation everywhere. That's all the allies around us are potential donations. We'll continue with Professor Francione on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. With Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, and GoVeganRadio with Bob Linden on Facebook. A couple of Bob Linden pages you can follow there. And when you attend the World Vegan Summit and Expo, March 20, 21, and 22, coming up, you'll be able to meet the folks from Greenlight Meals, the website greenlightmeals.com, greenlitemeals.com. There is no excuse. Anywhere you are in the USA, you can have delicious, nutritious vegan meals delivered right to your home or office from Greenlight Meals. Check out the website. Get involved with one of the plans. I mean, breakfast, lunch, dinner, snacks, smoothies, desserts, foods the kids will love. You have weight and nutrition consultation with Melissa Bray. So go to the website, Greenlight Meals. It's greenlitemeals.com. And we're talking to Professor Gary Francione. Before the break, we were talking about, one thing, Gary, I think, like, the deception with HSUS starts with its very name, as in Humane Society, the Humane Society of the United States, and people think that they're donating to help shelters all around the country. And then to actually put out a magazine called Animal Sheltering, I mean, look at the return on investment. Rather than run shelters, put out this magazine and, you know.
HSUS has been for years promoting the idea that it has something to do with sheltering animals. But, I mean, you know, look, in many respects, HSUS hasn't changed. And, you know, it's the same organization it was 30 years ago. It was the same, I mean, it's the same organization it was when it first started. It's a welfare organization. It's one that, unlike some other welfare organizations in different countries, doesn't really have anything to do with animal shelters directly. I mean, they don't run animal shelters. And I think that what's troubling to me is how the whole movement has sort of collapsed into HSUS. The HSUS is now, without doubt, the leading organization, the leading animal organization in the United States, and all of the organizations, from PETA to Compassion Over Killing to Mercy for Animals to all the rest of them, basically are following along and are promoting some version of this HSUS story, and that's what's really troubling, and it makes the vegan summit that you are organizing even more important, because there really is, 30 years ago there were dissenting voices in the organized movement. There aren't dissenting voices anymore. They're basically all the same now. They're all telling the same story. I mean, with minor variations, they're all telling the same story. They're all promoting the same idea. And so, what I think is really essential for the folks if we want to start a grassroots movement, or actually one's already started, but if we want to develop a grassroots movement, we got to do that. And I think that, you know, the World Vegan Summit is going to be an excellent opportunity for people to get together and network, work with, you know, meet people who are thinking about abolitionist veganism and doing things about abolitionist veganism. I mean, there are going to be the International Vegan Association that I mentioned a few minutes ago.
We'll be discussing the topics you mentioned a few moments ago, too, I'm sure.
You know. The International Vegan Association will be there. They'll be doing workshops with me, and you'll be able to meet those folks and talk with those folks, and I'll be able to talk with you and answer questions that people have. I'll be able to do that. And but we need to strategize, because we need to develop a movement so that when we talk about allies and camaraderie, it's something meaningful. And, you know, the idea that our movement views itself as having Whole Foods and Burger King as allies, I mean, there's something so deeply disturbing about that.
I can't imagine a Burger King table at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. For some reason, I know Wayne can, but I can't picture that.
Yes, and there won't be a Burger King table there, and
HSUS table there either, or MFA, or any of those people, right?
Thank goodness, but yeah, I mean, I looked at this, and I was really disturbed by this, which is why I sent it to you yesterday, because somebody sent it to me. I don't get animal sheltering, and as far as I could tell, this was not available online, and somebody sent it to me anonymously. I got it at the university, and I opened it. And it just took my breath away.
Yeah, they like the big tent approach with the murderers in the tent with us,
I don't want to be in that tent, Bob.
No, we're not in that tent. We're out of time. Wayne always looks uncomfortable, or the animals look always uncomfortable in photos with him. I see in that. The dog is saying, like, get me out of here. Thanks for listening. It's Go Vegan Radio, goveganradio.com.